Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Molly and Hall, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767 or you can tweet your thoughts at Molly Haw. 5 at 5 with Molly and Haw starts now.
Eloy Jimenez homered again. Lucas Giolito pitched very well, and the White Sox split a four-game series on the road against an American League heavyweight. He is 500, an unrealistic goal if the Sox address their rotation concerns.
I think 500's a realistic goal, even if they don't address their rotation concerns. I think that they will, and they have to, and they'll do. There'll be other people coming up and trying to do it, and eventually we'll see Dylan Cease before the year is out. But I think he will be more on the Michael Kopech schedule from a year ago, hopefully not including an injury. But it is really uplifting to see that kind of performance from Giolito. And as you mentioned, the home run from Jimenez, you know, another home
Mount
run from
Mount Eloy
him.
Erupts again.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I really, it's about player development. And what's neat is that it's not, you know, Moncada is playing really well. Tim Anderson is getting better. Now we got Eloy. You're starting to see it a little bit, right? He's had three homers in two games. And Lucas Giolito, that's a huge one. To see a pitcher develop a little bit here is huge. Hopefully, Ronaldo Lopez can make a similar type of jump before you get into next year. But, you know, it's about individual performance, and I was really, really uplifted by Giolito, and it's so nice to see a guy who's figuring something out, who's adjusted and is learning something, and we're watching it happen in front of our eyes. So God bless him. It's a nice thing to see. I don't know that 500 is realistic, but I'm going to say let's get to 500. That would be a huge
Why not? Step. You know, I think that's the thing. If you ignore all the rhetoric about all this, you know, player development and individual progress and this and that, you look at the White Sox, and they have been quietly competitive, and they have a shot if you look at their young talent progressing, and Tim Anderson has the Adidas commercial. He's, you know, basically says the game's boring, watch me change it. Well, the Sox can change the narrative, and they can not have the kind of season that maybe people expected them to. And that requires a different approach in terms of the mindset. And Dylan Cease, his next start should be in a Sox uniform. I understand the Super 2 status concerns. I understand not wanting to necessarily, you know, see him fail at the major league level. At the same time, I think you see what he's doing at AAA, and you see the need that does exist in your rotation. And I guess that it's a little bit frustrating to see the Sox trot out somebody who's going to be overmatched every fifth day when you have a team that's playing very well, better than expected. They're three games below 500, 23-26. We're hitting that Memorial Day milepost in the baseball season where you start to evaluate what you have, what you are, and what you're not. And the Sox are a team that have been sneaky good, but they're not going to continue to progress unless they address the rotations. I don't know if that's somebody, a free agent after the draft, because you don't have to worry about compensation. I don't know if that's a trade. I don't know if that's bringing up Cease. But you got to do something, because these players, you know, part of creating and rebuilding a team is creating a winning culture and getting them used to having good habits. And I think that they're 23-26, you start to look at the wild card standings and you start to think, well, you know, it's not crazy to think that they could be a 500 team. And if you're a 500 team, you're flirting with respectability and a little bit more than that.
Yeah, completely realistic to get to 500. I think that they can. I think that they will. And then I do think that you can get to 500. You can continue to stay on your player development plan. I mean, you're probably not going to catch the Twins in the division. You're already 10 back of them, and they seem legitimate 17 games over 500, although you will start to find out over the next three games where you kind of match up against the Twins. Even if they don't bring up Dylan Cease, and I think that would be a blast, I think, for the fans, especially if the Sox continue to win as they have been lately, you still have these two guys, Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez, to watch and enjoy their development, to continue to get them to peak. Giolito, man, now a 2.77 ERA after just having a ridiculously high ERA last year. Eloy Jimenez now with six home runs, maybe tighten up his defense a little bit. But, I think that you just continue with the plan as it is. And, yes, you can get to 500 probably within the next 2 weeks.
Well, first of all, I just have to say that watching Giolito last night was just a joy. I mean,
nice hat, buddy.
Thank you very much. You have a nice hat on as well today. you could take your Trouts and your Bryants and your Harpers, and that's all great, and I love those guys as well. But I'll take a good pitching performance, I think, over almost anything. And you got that last night against a great team. Giolito's been on an absolute tear lately. I think that whatever he's tapped into in terms of the offseason stuff, mechanical stuff that he's been working on before the season and during the season. You mentioned the thing with the tempo that he was talking about last night after the game, Mully. Whatever it is, it's working. And the stuff has always been there. That's never been the question. It's been everything else but that. And now it's all coming together for him. He looks like he is, here to stay at the top of this rotation. As far as the rest of the rotation, it's where you come into a little bit of a snag. I mean, Lopez, for all of his upside, has been really inconsistent. Banuelos is a 4A guy. Nova got you a decent start, but there was a lot of luck in that game, too, the other night with the four double plays and the triple play as well. So, for me, I don't see this as a 500 team, even when things are going well, even when they're able to score runs, even if you can get Giolito and Lopez out there two out of every 5 days. I mean, even if Cease comes up, which could be happening, his last two starts down in Charlotte, 98 pitches and then 102 pitches last night. They could be prepping him and trying to stretch the arm out a little bit. And I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I'd love it, in fact. Of course, I wouldn't mind it. But there will be growing pains with him as well. He's not going to come out and just be, Jacob DeGrom from day one.
But he doesn't have to be.
He doesn't
That's
have
the thing.
To be. You're right.
I mean, you don't have to have a perfect pitcher when you bring him up from AAA. Everybody understands what he's going to be.
Yeah, and I think that guys develop, they will develop better and more quickly at the major league level. If the competition is steeper, you're going to get better more quickly. So I think that he'll be up, a month, 6 weeks. I mean, the sooner the better, because he's not going to be able to finish the season anyway. But I still think 500 is a little unrealistic with some of the guys you're throwing out there rotation-wise. I mean, Covey, Nova, like I said, these aren't exactly guys that instill a ton of confidence.
Kobe had a really good outing the last time.
He did, but it was Darvish-y. It was only innings, and you need a little bit more than that.
I get the fans wanting to be 500. I totally understand that. I can respect that. But I just, if they care to hear what I have to say, I'm sure they don't. It doesn't matter. What matters is what happened last night again, right? Giolito, we talked about Giolito, had another good start. That's awesome. Moncada had the RBI. Anderson had the RBI. Aloy had the home run.
Charlie Tilson scored a run. James McCann is hitting. You might have found a couple of guys that could help you with the rebuild without knowing it.
That's true. But those four names that I named first, that superfecta, if you will, okay? That's the future. That's the future of this ball club that's at the major league level right now, and they're producing at the major league level right now. That's what should be exciting. That's where your eyes should be.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
Did John Lester's outing fall under the concept of regression to the mean? Did performances of Lester and Cole Hamels against Philadelphia make you think about the preseason prediction of baseball prospectus.
Not really. I think you expected this a little bit from a guys who are from two guys who are over 30, and you know, Pecota is going to get a lot of attention because they set the bar pretty low, and they didn't expect much out of this rotation. But Lester historically does go through something like this almost every season. I don't know if the numbers match what they do in the last two starts, where he's given up, you know, 9 earned runs, 17 hits in his last 8 1/3 innings covering two starts. That's bad. John Lester has earned the benefit of the doubt. He's been, you know, he had a microscopic ERA at Wrigley Field before yesterday. Cole Hamels might be a little bit up and down. I don't know what to attribute that to. The last outing, it was against the Phillies. He has a funny stat against his former teams. He's terrible. I don't know if it gets inside his own head or whatever, but he was bad against the Rangers and he's bad against the Phillies, but he's been good overall. So I think these two guys have earned the benefit of the doubt. I'd rather have them in my rotation than out of my rotation. The Cubs do have depth behind them. So I don't know if it falls under the concept of regression to the mean or whatever. I think that John Lester is a pitcher in his, you know, mid-30s that has a lot of innings and a lot of experience, and he's going to figure out a way to be good again. And that is, you know, he's earned the benefit of the doubt. And Cole Hamels kind of falls under the same category. Maybe not as much. We haven't seen as much of him in Chicago. But I do think that both those guys are going to be more dependable and consistent than they are inconsistent.
You know, I thought Lester, in fairness, I thought he was pitching so well early that it was bound to be some kind of regression. Excuse me. I just didn't think that it would be as dramatic as the last couple of games. But I did think that it was coming at some form. The only thing about the baseball prospectus prediction that was true, and I didn't put a lot of stock in it then, and I still don't. But the reason they were looking at it because there's a lot of age on that pitching staff, and I think the fact that in one series you saw the two 34-year-olds struggle a little bit, it kind of did harken back to that idea. I don't believe that it is it's something that has legs moving forward, but I do think that you had to go into this season thinking that there could be, you know, just a couple of issues with guys as they get to their age. Again, Lester is going to end up having another great year. He's a great pitcher, but he did sort of come back down to earth a little bit. He was just ungodly in the opening part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at his earned run average, John Lester, for his career, he's 347. Right now, even with the dud last night, the four innings, he's at 268 now. So, yeah, there is going to be some regression to the mean, although it seems like it's been pretty dramatic over the last couple of games. As David said, yeah, Lester has these, like, eye-openingly bad games, like a couple per year. And maybe he's just getting them out of the way now. You just, like, you're always on a high wire act, though, with a starting pitcher who is 35 years old because, you know, eventually he is going to lose it. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year or next year or even the following year.
I heard you say it.
Quote me, John Lester has lost it. But it's going to happen.
Quote me.
It's going to happen eventually. Yeah, please take me out of context. I would, you know, hey, go ahead and
tweet. It's always been a dream
out
to be quoted out of context.
Oh, it's a great thing. You know, that's the kind of thing that doesn't happen around here at the Score. That,
never once.
People, never happened.
Nobody would do it. No.
And by the way, Mark Groney, everybody,
hey!
Yeah!
Hey! Molly, I have to tell you, you're uplifted by Lucas Giolito. I'm uplifted by you.
Thanks, Brody.
That's good morning.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brody.
David, you too, but I haven't seen you yet this morning.
Fine, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, I ran into Molly, and there was a moment there.
Oh,
so.
There was a lot
of love. You're done.
Yeah.
You are finished. Got in this town.
Yeah, that's it. Was I even supposed to be here this morning?
No, yeah, we'll ask Shane about that one.
Yeah.
John Lester has not been good, and Molly, you're right. The last couple times out, it has been kind of a dramatic shift from where he was before to where he was now. Now, that being said, of course, he wasn't going to have an ERA of 116 or 209 for the rest of the season. That's absolutely ridiculous. But, I mean, with him, and personally, I've been waiting for John Lester or I shouldn't say waiting, but I've been
quoting you.
No, no, don't do it. Oh. I've been expecting him to kind of fall off a cliff at some point, and he hasn't really done it over the past couple years. So until he has an extended run, like he has a, you know, a couple of poor starts in a row, if you see that over a month, over 6 weeks, then I would be more concerned about that. But I think, and this does go back to the Pakota thing a little bit, if you look at the age of these guys, I mean, with the bullpen and the state that it's in, you're going to be pressing these guys maybe a little bit more than you'd like to at times. I mean, Hamels really labored the other night just to get through those four innings with about 100 pitches, and you're going to need these guys to step up, and it's going to be interesting to see how some of the veterans, you know, handle that workload in August, in September, when, you know, at their age, you can lose it a little bit more quickly. So I'm not saying Lester's done, far from it. Cole Hamels is not done, but it's going to be very, very interesting to keep an eye on these two in particular, because they are the elder statesmen of the rotation, and see the workload and see how much wear and tear is on those arms come later in the season.
Well, if you're like me, you had to look up regression toward the mean this morning. I'll let the people in the cars do that when they stop driving. I won't read it to you because I want to get to Kevin.
Don't Google and drive.
Listen to us and drive. That's the safest
texting
thing
is cool though.
Yeah. You know, when you slow down. What I'm worried about, I'm going to put an over under at noon today that we'll have a tweet from Bruce Levine saying that John Lester is suffering from dead arm and is going on the 10-day. Is it DL now or the IL?
Wow, you're saying he's going on the IL.
Well, that's what he did not sound very positive after the game.
Right.
We were texting amongst ourselves during that game yesterday, raining on the Cubs parade a little bit, and that's totally fine. They deserved it. You know, here's the other thing with Lester. Like, some of that stuff with Lester, especially after the comeback, you gotta man up a little bit. You gotta shirts in, jocks tight, socks tall it. Just because the defense has fallen apart behind you, and the defense fell apart behind him yesterday, that home run, okay, that was all because John Lester was pissed and he was taking his ball and going home. He couldn't get over the fact that this Descalso couldn't get that done.
That wasn't an earned run because, as you say, right, there were a couple of errors,
right,
behind him.
So yeah, that's the thing about him that drives me absolutely bananas. And I'm predicting that by the time we get back here on Tuesday morning, that John Lester will have been diagnosed with, air quotes, dead arm and missing the next couple starts.
And by the way, those home runs, they were not cheapies. They were not windblown. No, they would have been out of
Lester
any
said as much.
the real Muto homer was on Waveland, right?
Yeah.
That was a 456 or something. It was crazy.
It might have hit a bro longest in a polo.
Longest one of his career.
I don't quite get the question.
Was splitting with Philadelphia good enough? Should the Cubs have done better? And are you concerned with their 4-5 record over the last 9 games?
I think they should have done better in that series. I do. You know, I know that a couple of games there can go either way, but they were unlucky a little bit. It's not good enough. You would think at home that they'd be able to handle that team a little bit better, but they were up 2-1, and then they had a bit of a bad game, and they still came back anyway. I mean, there was a moment there in that game where you thought, my God, this is something else, and yet they had given up too much early. And as you say, Dustin, that the errors and then the response to that was disappointing, and we'll see where that ends up. But yeah, you know, 4-5 in their last 9, they're not going to win every game and they're not going to win every series, but you kind of half expect them to. And they were on this kind of this great run, and then they kind of just, you know, mediocre, not great, not really bad, but mediocre, and that's not them.
Yeah, but they're 29-19, so the expectations are high. This is a team that they're a check swing call away from having won 3 of 4 against the first place team in the East. And I don't think that you're happy with any split. You're never happy when you lose a game that you fall behind 7-0 with your ace, your de facto ace on the mound. But the Phillies are good too, and I have learned my lesson, I think we all have, about underestimating the Cubs through these tough stretches. They're on a pace to win 98 games, so I still think they're a very good team. They could have probably done better. I think the first game could have gone their way as well, but again, at Memorial Day, You sort of like the weekend is when you sort of take stock. They could take two out of three from the Reds and be in really good shape in first place in the Central. And then everyone's saying that when they wake up Monday morning, when they get back to work on Tuesday, boy, those Cubs responded to the urgency. And it's the same thing we've been saying the last month. So this happens in baseball. It wasn't necessarily good enough. They might have done better, but I'm not terribly concerned.
Yeah, I'm not concerned, but I think they should have done better in this series. Milwaukee's still right there at a game and a half back. You should have won the Jake Arrieta game. You also made the Phillies feel good about themselves. I mean, they come into Wrigley Field, and they looked at the Cubs as a measuring stick, and they walk out saying and thinking, all right, yeah, we can compete with the best of the best. And at this point, coming into this game, Philly is a totally and completely average team in just about every single category of their baseball life, whether it's starting, bullpen, hitting. There's no area that stands out. So, yeah, I mean, if we're setting the bar high for the Cubs, and as David said, they're on pace to win 98 games, and this was not good enough, in my opinion.
You'd prefer to win the series at home. You'd prefer to win every series at home. But I guess I think more of the Phillies than you do, Mark Grody. I think that they are a very good team. I think that they're going to be a team that will be around come playoff time. I think, you know, Philadelphia and Atlanta will both probably make the playoffs out of that NL East. So I don't know if I'd say I'm concerned about their record. I mean, it's 4-5 over the last 9 days. It's not the worst thing in the world. You're still in first place technically. And after they got the Reds this weekend, I'm very, very interested to see the Cubs and Astros Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. Another measuring stick for the Cubs.
What do you mean technically in first place? Is there another way to be in first place?
Yeah, they're a game and a half. There's a cushion
there, Kevin.
Well, because
the Brewers have played more games. Okay. Right? I think that's where Kevin's going. I hate to help Kevin out with the metrics.
Just asking.
Houston and St. Louis on their upcoming
the
road
Lou.
Trip.
The Lou, yes.
So they best eat against the Reds over the next 3 days.
They usually do.
Yep.
It's not good enough. You're frustrated, you know, the check swing. But I'm more frustrated about Lester. That I'm just, and he's had a great. I didn't expect him to do what he did in the beginning, but I don't like seeing these consecutive games in a row. And as I predicted a question before, I'm going to stick to it. And I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm right. That by Tuesday we're going to hear that John Lester has dead arm and he's missing the next two starts.
I'm with you on that, by the way, Rhodes.
That's happened like 2 or 3 years in a row now, if
absolutely.
I think so.
And I actually wouldn't have a problem with it. I mean, it's still so early in the season. Like, get him right now instead of, like, August.
And with Montgomery and Chatwood being okay, right, I think you could survive it.
Yeah. They need Chatwood's bat in the lineup.
Yeah. What about Cole Hamels? What's wrong with his arm?
Well, I'm gonna say nothing's wrong with his arm. I'm going to go back to what David mentioned, I think, in the opening. I don't know if it's first question or the opening segment of the show. I think there's just something between the ears with the facing of the old teams. Now, ask me that question again next week, right? I mean, then we might be on to something. Answer. We might be, as it was put, regressing towards the mean. Is remember, Google
that. Figure that out yet, Dustin?
I figured it out. I just didn't want to read it because we're time sensitive.
Like, come on in here. We could go over it if you'd like.
Is it possible that Hamels saw a reflection of himself and then was kind of shocked by his own handsomeness, which threw him off his game during his last
start? You mean
that
smile he saw between the ears?
Yeah. We could always just regress back to age, too.
If you're feeling bad about the Cubs, remember Houston lost two games to the White Sox. The Cubs had a split against a really good team in Philadelphia. And how about Gene Segura? How good was he in that series? And Real Muto? They got a good team.
They're good. They are good.
And the White Sox, the Astros got a split against the White Sox. So now all of a sudden it's George Springer and Altuve.
Yeah.
As if the lineup was just completely rotten without those two guys.
Well, I think that's a great question. And for us, it's pretty easy.
What is the best thing about the Bears' 100 Best Players list by Dan and Don? Did they get it right? And what was the biggest head-scratcher?
Well, the best thing about it is that it created such a wide range of debate. That's what these things are supposed to do. And it's been a week-long exercise. I thought the Bears probably could have gotten 2 weeks out of this had they kind of staggered the release of the top 25 and then the second 25 to 50, et cetera. Did they get it right? They got it terribly wrong, and they got it perfectly right. They got it right because there was enough range and an opinion that they created this sort of discussion. So I don't believe that there's any wrong answers in this list. I think that that's why they got it right. These are two guys who are respected, so they've seen a lot of football. The Bears entrusted them to write the book on the franchise the Encyclopedia of Bears Football the last 100 years. So they come at this with a lot of credibility, and I think that credibility means their opinion matters, and they can back it up. And if you can back up your opinion, you're not wrong. And I think that's what is a beautiful thing about, you know, these kind of discussions or arguments, because they're defensible positions. I didn't see any of these guys, a lot of these guys play. A lot of us never saw a lot of these guys play. So that's very difficult to have that kind of perspective on a top 10 list and all these Hall of Famers that were just kind of names to us. The biggest head scratchers to me, based on what I just said, are guys that I saw play that I thought would have been a little bit higher. I thought Brian Urlacher deserved to be probably in the top 10, at least higher than 14. I thought Jay Cutler was not the 85th best player in Bears history. I thought Refrigerator Perry should have been in the top 100. I understand why all those decisions were made, but I think that the other side of the argument is also worth hearing. So those are some head scratchers. It has been a fun week, and I applaud them for their efforts.
I think you're spot on, David. I think that the right two guys were doing the list. They're also very professional guys. You know what I mean? Just knowing both of them and having worked with Dan for so many years and having a great friendship with him and knowing Don Pearson and respecting him, watching him work for so many years. I think that both those guys are going to be total pros about it. Probably not something that they embrace doing. Wouldn't be something I want to do. I think if you and I, for instance, tried to put this list together, there would probably be a fist fight. It would be you beating me up, but I would definitely have strong opinions.
It's a hard job.
It's a really difficult thing to do. And it's, you know, are there guys you got to get on a table for? How do you go about it? I just think it's a difficult task, and the right people did it. There were some head scratchers for me. I'm not sure that I wouldn't have appreciated sort of a paragraph of explanation. You know, this is how we came about putting the list together. This, you know, we wanted to be representative of the head scratchers for me are the current Bears. All of the current Bears are head scratchers for me. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I just don't know how they put the grouping together, and I don't quite understand that. And then the other one, the one that really jumps out at me is not having Dan Hampton in the top 10 and not having Dan Hampton higher on the list, because Dan Hampton was arguably the best player, or certainly could be the representative of the greatest defense ever assembled. So therefore, I would have him significantly higher on the list. At whose expense, you might add? Well, you know, again, I think it's a very difficult task to put it together, because, you know, I got to see Peyton play. I saw Butkus play, certainly not live, but on tape. We used to watch tons of Butkus tape when I was a kid playing grammar school football at Tommy Moore. You know, don't know anything about Sid Luckman, but know that he holds all those records and won tons of championships. You know, I've had the pleasure of working with Gale Sayers and doing a couple of remotes with Gale Sayers, and you wouldn't believe the line of people that would be there during every break. You've never seen anything like it. He is just a amazing talent as a player. Ran, you know, like no one else. The Kansas Comet. He had this sort of loping stride. I have had the pleasure of the horrible discomfort of Walter Payton grabbing me in the rear end and reeling around ready to strike someone and seeing sweetness smiling at me. What the hell are you supposed to do when that guy, you know, gooses you? I don't know Bulldog Turner. It's just really a hard thing to put together. But the idea that Hampton, as representative of the 85 team, which has a ton of members on this list, and the only Super Bowl champion, that he's not in the top 10 is confounding to me.
Yeah.
Well, and he's 11th, so I'm picking Nit.
I'm right with you. I jotted it down here. I scribbled it. Dan Hampton, Brian Urlacher, both I think should be in the top 10. And I'm looking at that. Like, those, like, Covert is 13, Dent is 12, Hampton is 11. I mean, I could make an argument for all three of those guys being in the top 10. I would take out the following: Danny Fortman and Bulldog Turner. because I don't know much about those two guys, and we are afraid of what we don't know. So I am those two guys. You guys are out, and you're not here to defend yourself. So I just put Brian Urlacher and Dan Hampton in the top 10.
Everybody knows Bulldog Turner was the seventh pick in the 1940 draft out of Hardin-Simmons University, Mark. And you fancy yourself a Bears fan.
Yeah. Everyone with a Google machine.
Mr. Bear, I don't even know what you're talking
about.
I didn't Google it. I'm still hung up on Cutler being so low on the list. It seems just not right. I know it was so long ago, and we've been through each rollout of the list every single day, and it's created a lot of discussion, which is the point of this thing. So I think they've achieved that, but I still can't get over Jay at number 85. And I think Hester probably should have been a little bit higher as well.
Well, the list is great because it made you have an emotion, right? People get fired up about this stuff, good, bad, or indifferent. Not an easy job at all. Not an easy job.
Plus, we've gotten 10 minutes out of it.
Right. 10 minutes.
Listen,
I could
literally do the rest of the show on this list.
Seriously.
I mean, I can't even tell you how pumped up I am about this.
And with all due respect to Dan Fortman's family, okay, at 6 foot tall, at 6 foot tall back in the day, he was probably a beast playing guard, okay? But, you know, forget about me. David, you mentioned it. Molly, you didn't mention it exactly, but I've never heard Danny Fortman's name in my life.
Isn't he a regular guest on the show? Danny Fortman?
Before it was conceived, yes.
Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas
offensive
guy.
Does he do afternoons?
Yeah.
Dan Hampton needed to be in the top 10. I understand this
Danny
guy's Parkins. In the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
Chew it and do it. I have a problem with Refrigerator Perry not being on the list at all. Okay, listen.
We'll have to discuss that.
Because here's the thing. I kept bringing up the fridge when we got into like the 70s, and nobody said he shouldn't be on the list at all at that point.
Well, but
we all assumed.
He never even made a Pro Bowl.
I understand all that.
And you got 28 Hall of Famers.
I was expecting him to be in like the 70-ish range. But as we kept getting this list unveiled, nobody said anything until he wasn't in the top 25 and he shouldn't be on the list.
Yeah, I knew that when he wasn't in the top 20, the top 25 hadn't come out, he wasn't going to be on that. There were too many Hall of Famers.
I mean, I don't want to disrespect anybody. I'm just going to. Leslie Frazier, it's a four-year career. He might be the best defensive back in the history of the Bears, but it was a four-year career, and he exited like on the first play of the second quarter of the Super Bowl. It was 4 years. I don't know.
In fairness to the fridge, he is in the WWE Hall of Fame, along with such luminaries as Mr. T and Donald Trump.
Well, so. I figured he was being punished because Ditka gave him the chance to have a touchdown in the Super Bowl and not Walter Payton. So now we're going to punish Fridge for that.
I don't think these two guys care about that. But
no, I don't either.
It's an interesting omission, it is.
What kind of question is that?
This segment brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Very quickly, gentlemen, will Illinois beat the May 31st legislative deadline to legalize sports gambling in the state? And how big of a story is this?
It's a huge story because they got $200 million they're counting on in the budget. And no, they're not going to make this deadline. This is ridiculous, and the stuff they're arguing about is nonsensical. Get it done.
It's a big story if it passes. It's a bigger story if it doesn't because of what Governor Pritzker has counted on in terms of the budget. 200 million reasons why they need to get this done, but I don't have any optimism that they will. We're a week away from the deadline. The whole fight is between DraftKings and FanDuel, and so the so-called bad actor clause that they're including, they're finding a way to mess up a sure thing. That's unfortunate. We're talking to Sam Panayotovich at 6:20 about this because it is a big deal.
Won't happen. Big story, yes. Kevin?
Well, I'm Mr. Optimism, so I think they're going to get the deal done. It'll be some, 11th hour type deal. They need the money, don't they, Molly? They need the money so badly. As bungled up as this state is legislatively, I think they are going to get this through somehow. And David, I agree with you. It's a huge story either way.
Huge, huge story. I don't think it gets done, and I can't wait for Sam to clear up all the questions that we all have.
He was down there yesterday, I believe,
yes,
right?
He was.
Yeah,
yes,
he's in Springfield, so
All right. We'll be getting to that soon. And we got a lot to talk about, all of it. What do you think? 312-644-6767. We're talking Giolito. We're talking Lester. We're talking about the Cubs, where they're at right now. Feeling good about it. We've got a lot of Danny Fortman conversation coming up. No, not really. And gambling, what do you think? 312-644-6767. It is Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.